Why dove where morning sorrow? doves will moan in sorrow.
Oh, there it is.
The willows will hang their heads. I'll live my life in sorrow since mother and daddy.
We hadn't planned to do that. Have never done it. I guess Daddy and I have sung it in the same group, of course, but I don't know. Had you ever sung that before, Carl?
No. Mom. I've heard Mom sing it, but I've never.
Anyway.
Never.
That's kind of one of those get your heads together type songs that we've been talking about. White Dove. Ralph Stanley recorded it. By the way, during the week, I hope if you all have something to write on or something, if you're really interested in this kind of music, I'll give you names and sometimes certain recordings to get. But anything that you can find by the Stanley Brothers is good music to listen to for this kind of stuff. And many times, I don't know if you'll want to learn how to do it, but if you want to learn how to sing any kind of this stuff, that's about the only way to do it, is just get it layered in your ears. And even if you don't want to do it, if you just want to listen to it, it's awful good listening. So anything by the Stanley Brothers is good stuff. And while we're talking about good stuff, were most of you at the concert last night? What do you think about Daddy and Esau singing? Yeah. Oh. Whew. I
top
tell you,
top of the mountain. Wasn't
yeah, it? I'm gonna have to somehow or other get a tape of that whole set for my sister's brother and mom. Mom will want it. I don't think Mom's ever heard you sing on that big with that big an audience, has she? Has Mother ever heard you sing with it in a place that big? Yeah. Well, that was really something. I thought it was a great performance. It was a stirring moment. And the week's not done yet, so you might come up with a few others. today, I have a couple of people I want you to meet and listen to their singing, and there may be places where you can sing with them, or choruses and stuff, or if not, I hope that you will still feel that your life has been enriched by getting to know them. I'm sure that around the campus this week, you've seen this fella who he says today he looks like a bleached out UPS man. So, that was his line, not mine. So, well, what can you say? There's no accounting for taste, Carl. I tell you how I first met up with him. I heard his a recording that was made of the a collection of music that's been done at the Vandalia Gathering. Vandalia was one of the old original names first considered for West Virginia. It was Vandalia, and Augusta was one of those also. That's where these words come from.
That's where Augusta comes from. Yeah. That was one of the questions I was going to ask. I was
like,
I forgot to get a piece of paper.
And so every year in the Capitol, Memorial Day weekend, we have a real big gathering of musicians and storytellers and food people and old friends and reunions and those kinds of things goes on right in front of the Cultural Center, between the Cultural Center and the Capitol Building in Charleston. And so that's Memorial Day weekend. Any of you are invited to that. It's a wonderful time. It's all free. You just kind of, float in and out of there. And it's wonderful. Banjo contest, the best banjo pickers in the state will be there, and the fiddle contest and everything going on, and people are playing music and singing all out among these huge big maple trees, and it's right on the banks of the river there. And all you have to do is get yourself to Charleston on any interstate and look for the Gold Dome, that's the Capitol building, and just kind of, as the interstates merge there, just head for the dome, because that's where it's going to be. And don't be thrown off, though. There is a street before your turn off called Capitol Street. That's not it. and everybody gets turned off. You know, they turn off the Capitol. It's Greenbrier Street where you turn.
Planted deep.
And plenty of parking, you know. Plenty of food and plenty of bathrooms. It's a very nice festival for that kind of thing. Beautiful quilts on display there. The best in the whole world quilt display. Anyway, I had heard this collection. They made an album called The Music Never Dies. And his guitar picking was on there. Oh. And I also have a friend called Hazel Dickens who had said, oh, you got to meet Cole. She sort of followed him around that whole festival that he was there making when that recording was made. And anyway, I got to meet him, and he was everything and more that I had expected. So, and he lives and was born and raised, I guess. Weren't you born and raised down there?
Yeah.
Now be calm. I'm trying to keep him. It's kind of hard for one person to contain all this, but anyway, I want Carl to tell you a little bit about where he was born and his. Do you mind telling them that kind of stuff? Because you never told me. I don't know anything about it. I just met him at this Vandalia gathering, because I heard him over there singing. And all these musicians were there waiting to go on stage, and I heard him singing, and I said, wow, you know, went over and listened to the singing, and then somebody said, do you know who that is? And we finally figured we didn't want to stand down there and sing with the musicians. We were going to go out there and sing where the people were. So we went out on the front steps and sang out there, and the program's going on. We never even knew the program was going on. We were having such a good time. Did you hear yourself on the radio? They taped you.
No.
You were on public radio.
No, that good little preacher buddy of mine, Jim McGee.
Mm-hmm.
He came to me down at Mount Airy in North Carolina, and he said, Carl, grab your guitar, play something right now. And I said, okay, why? He said, just play. He grabbed all the banjo, and we started playing. We was, I don't know, playing something. He said, guess what? I said, what? He said, you're on the air on public radio right now. You're on the air at Mount Airy's radio right now, and you're picking here, same places, the same time.
Oh,
we came
I
out and recorded us there.
Oh,
the
recording of the public radio thing,
yeah,
was
it
on
was
the
on
radio
the air at that time, and they had come and recorded us. Somebody stuck a boom mic into us at the Mount Airy's festival and went back to town, and it was on at the time.
So you're on both stations.
Jim, he's a great little fella, Jim McGee. He's been up here. He was up here for Blues Week. He's my little preacher buddy.
He really is.
He's dearly loved a little fella.
He's a Presbyterian minister. And
right.
But if you saw him here for Blues Week, buddy, you'd never know it.
I pick on him all I can.
He loves to play the blues. And
I tell him I'm going to take him down to my country and get him to preach a revival down there and get some good old holiness people around him. And preacher's liable to get saved, and then we're going to have to baptize him. And then we're going to get some of them elders lay hands on him and pray, and then the Holy Ghost is going to fall on him. Then he won't have to go home Saturday night and write the notes for his Sunday morning message.
That's right.
He'll step in the pulpit and it'll rain down on him.
That's right.
I pick on him. I'm rough on the little fella.
I know.
Like yesterday over here, I was saying see to you a while ago because you said something nice about me. Be around that, I might as well be married again.
I know.
She picks on me all the time. She's rough on me. Of course, I'm rough on her.
Leslie, was living in Chicago at the time and came down to the Folk Festival in Glenville, and that's where she and Carl met each other. So they have this mutual caretaking fussing with each other thing going on about trying to keep each other in line. Anyway, were you born there in McDowell County?
As far as I know, I was born somewhere around War, West Virginia.
There's a small town called War, W-A-R, and it's down in way in the southern part of West Virginia. And it's very much in the coal fields. That's where that whole part of the state is heavy coal mining. Not so much these days as it used to be.
Heavy dead.
Yes, it's very, you know, the unemployment is very high, and I think it's something like 25% off and on in McDowell County now.
Up to 44.
Mm-hmm, up to 44%.
Yeah,
it's
44%.
It's really, it's pretty difficult. Do you still work?
I do some cabinet building.
Did you ever work in the mines?
I worked in the mines when I was 14 year old in the evenings after school in a 22 inch seam of coal.
It was just 22 inches high?
Yeah.
What did you do in there?
My buddy, he got stuck one time. He reached for a pick,
uh-huh,
and his hips, you know, jacked up against the top, and he got hung. He couldn't go back and he couldn't go forward. And We fought every evening on the way home from school, and then one of us would holler at each other the next morning to go to school. And I really got a kick out of that because I had to get over there and lay on my side and take my Brogans, double them up, and kick him in the hips until I kicked him loose from the roof of the mine.
Oh.
He was hung, couldn't go backwards or forwards.
Well, when you were in a 22-inch
mm-hmm.
high, I see.
Rock on top, rock on the bottom, nothing gave except you.
What were you digging with? A hand pick?
Yeah, you dug out a little duck's nest, we call it, with a hand pick, and then took an auger, which you didn't have room to call it a breast auger, but you didn't have room to put it up against your breast. You didn't have room to put it against your knees because the throw would hit the bottom and come up.
So you just did it
chin.
All with your shoulder.
You had to lay
shoulder.
On your side. You had to lay on your side and try to drill that auger up 6 or 8 foot deep. And me and him, we were a great experienced coal miner, so we'd have the
14.
Gift of, yeah, 14-year-old. We knew you tamped the, you, we knew you loaded the hole with powder and shoved in a stick with a cap in it and tamped it with some clay dummies. Mm-hmm. We knew that, but lack of experience, we spent more time shooting out what they call a duck's nest, mm-hmm. blowouts. Our holes would blow out, and then
yeah.
you can't shoot there again because you done blowed out where you would put the powder where it would be confined to, you know,
and when
blow
you
the
put the powder, you use that to blow it apart.
Right. Right.
But didn't it strike anybody's mind that this might be too dangerous for 14-year-olds to be working in there?
I had a cousin, Rose Munchie, that was grown at the time.
A woman?
Nope, he's what? A man.
Rose was his
Roosevelt
name?
Roosevelt is his full
Roosevelt,
name.
And Roosevelt, and you called him Rose. Munchie,
yeah. And he came in. Now, wait a minute.
No, you can't do this.
We weren't timbered.
Oh, you weren't timbered.
We weren't timbered.
Now tell them what timbered is.
Well, you take the coal out. That's a great feeling. Go in there where nobody has ever been before.
Mm-hmm.
You know that no man on this earth has ever walked there. You mm-hmm. take that coal out of the way, you're walking on new ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you go in there and you're anxious to get some more coal.
Mm-hmm.
So you dig out, make a little hole to set the auger in, start drilling again, and don't set the timber.
You're setting timber is piling timber up to
no,
hold the...
No,
what is setting timber?
You cut off a log, small log, cut off a small log, stand it up, make a wedge, and drive over top of it, or a wedge and a cap board, it's called, a 2x6, 2 foot long. Put that over top of it, and then a wedge and a leg under the timber log.
Were there many children working in those mines? I mean, younger than you?
No, not that I know of. They might have been at some of the other smaller mines, like down around Yukon or English. There might have been some little kids working in mines. But
yeah.
everybody in the mining country, they like I got a cousin's boy named Jimmy,
mm-hmm.
and my cousin runs coal mines, and he about drove my cousin crazy because he got to be 16 and he was up there hanging around the mines,
mm-hmm.
and then by 17 he had him a job. Outside
yeah.
and illegal, but he had him the job. And by 18, he's not allowed to go inside yet because he's what you call red cap.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, he's not even red cap yet because
yeah.
red cap is inside but got to be in sight of an experienced miner. And this cousin's boy wasn't even red cap. And something would happen, the boys want to go in and repair something. He's one of these humpers. He's got to work. He's got to turn into a big man coal miner.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to be it. And so he'd be in there illegally. My cousin gets scared to death because the mine inspector show up and catch him in there. It could be a big fine for him. But he couldn't hold him back, couldn't hold him out.
Yeah.
And he gave him orders, told him, you lose your job if I catch you inside the drift mouth, all that kind of stuff. He's still sneaking there.
So you worked in coal mines then when you were a teenager?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then...
Coal mines and driving a horse, skidding logs.
Skidding logs with horse. Did you, how many children were in your family?
Five of us.
Five of you. What was your mother and daddy both there with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What did your daddy do for a living?
Coal miner.
He was a coal miner. And your mom worked there at the house?
Mm-hmm.
So when did you go into service? How old were you?
In service. I was in California, and there was a job blight. There's a job blight in Northern California in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
seasonal, a lot of tourists.
You mean you went out to California before you went in the service?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you go to California, for heaven's sake? What, I mean, you know, being growing up in a coal mine.
I was working in a big coal mines, and brakemen and motormen were putting some extra stuff, many, many tons of extra stuff, back up in a siding to hold it and leave it there and take some to the bottom with them, okay? The bottom is where it all comes out from underground, 620 foot down. And the section was about 14 miles away from the bottom. And they've got some back here, like dead batteries, 20-ton batteries, load machine batteries, a couple of them, and maybe 8 or 10 cars of rock that would hold 12 or 15 ton to the car where you put 5 ton of coal in there. A lot of weight, okay?
Yeah.
Setting back in here already. Got some more weight. Don't want to take it to the bottom because that would overload him. You couldn't hold it back.
Yeah.
Okay? So going to bump that and shove that back up in there, cut and scotch it, cut it all off, and take a third of it and go to the bottom. Bumped it, lost it, and here he went.
Mm-hmm.
Brakeman went with him a long way on it, and finally the brakeman bailed off, trying. He had been crawling along beside the load and got up quite a ways, and the brakeman bailed off, grabbing a switch, trying to derail the trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he derailed about the last third of it. The general superintendent was there. The brakeman, he was a friend of mine, and the motorman was a neighbor of mine.
Mm-hmm. So how did this get you to California?
That runaway load caught up with the doubleheader man trip. It had 60-some men on it.
Oh.
And it was doing about 120 miles an hour, and that man trip was doing about 12 or 15 miles an hour.
Oh.
So we took off and went to funerals for a little over a week.
Hmm.
And then I'm getting ready to step on this cage to go down that 620 feet. And I've been in the mines 2 weeks, in the big mines.
How old were you then?
I was 18 then. That's the legal age to get in, you see. I'd went over to Welch County seat and made me a miner's certificate, and now I'm able to go into big mines. Been there 2 weeks and this happens. And my dad had just bought a 100-and-some-acre strip of land. That was the only thing that made me get back on that cage, because I'd get on the cage and he'd start to hook the chain, I'd jump off.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't get the nerve to go back in there anymore because it just seemed like life was too cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Human bodies were too cheap in a coal mines. And I'd get back on, okay, you're gonna go, all right. And I'd almost start the cage up and I'd jump off. Everybody getting mad at me. Finally, Dad said, well, boy, if you don't go in now, you probably never will again. And I said, well, Pap, I'll tell you, I'm gonna go in, but just as soon as I get enough money to get out of this cotton picking country, I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got out, I had a sister and brother-in-law that had went to California. And I figured that's as far away as I could get. So I bought a bus ticket to Reno. The boss told me, he says, Carl, when you get out there now, he said, it's not going to be as easy as you think out there. And they were mechanizing the section. They'd cut down from 33 to 17 crew and from 17 to 11. And I was still in 11. So he told me, he said, I'm going to hold your job open for you a little bit, Carl. He said, you get out there, it might not be as easy to find a job as you think. He said, I'll hold your job open 2 more work weeks, 10 more work days, 2 weeks. He said, you drop me a card and let me know how it's going for you. I got out there and wrote him a card the next day. Found me a job making good money, and I didn't go to job. I didn't go to work for 6 weeks. I told him I had me a good job, give that to somebody else. Don't hold it open for me.
All right. So, and you lived there for a while, and then you went in service.
Yeah, I was bumming around one fall, one winter, nothing to do.
Uh-huh.
Tried to get into the Air Force, that didn't work. Tried to get into the Marines, that didn't work. Tried to get into the Navy, that didn't work.
How much school had you gone to at this time?
Dropped out, 10th grade.
10th grade, mm-hmm. But you went through 10th grade, yeah. Went up to 10th grade, okay.
Anyway, I tried to get in, tried to volunteer for every service there was.
Mm-hmm.
They'd check my eyes and would even send me out a reading.
Yeah.
So, draft board give a holler, Army give a holler.
Mm-hmm.
Said, hey, we got a feller up in 50 miles out of Redding, California, that is going to be drafted, but it would be wise for him not to go. His daddy fell and broke his back, and the boy is running an electronics shop and supporting the family. Be good if he could stay out.
So you took his place?
I see. They said, would you fill his slot? I said, be glad to. They said, okay, we'll have Welch, West Virginia draft you, and we'll induct you out here. I said, okay.
All right. So now, when you were growing up there, what music was going on? It was music going on at all when you were?
Oh, yes.
Were your parents singing or your family? And
Daddy, someone? Daddy, he never played any kind of music. He'd sing some, but man, Daddy, he had a foot pat and a hand clap. He'd get rhythm going. I'm telling you, it was something. Something to hear him.
Yeah.
He'd really get you on fire with that rhythm. He could get going with that foot pad. And I haven't seen anybody that could do it. It was some kind of popping that foot two times or popping that hand two times and that foot one time. Oh, Lord, it was a beat.
Did your mother sing or play an instrument?
Yeah, she played organ, piano, five string.
What church did you go to?
Wasn't many churches around. We had a little Baptist church down in Warrior Hollow where I belong to now, but I don't know. It seemed too highfalutin for everybody, okay? Mm-hmm. Your upper class seemed to go there. So what we went to was my grandpa. I had an Uncle Harris, and he'd get Uncle Harris to come up under an apple tree and bring his fiddle, and we'd go to church there on the grass.
On the grass.
Under that apple tree on Sunday. Have a good meeting there. He'd fiddle and sing some to us and then preach to us, and then we'd all sing some.
And it was mostly kind of your family?
Yeah, just mostly kinfolk, yeah.
Yeah.
It's good get-togethers. Then we got to having what we call family. Just, we call them get-togethers. It was front porch things. Mm-hmm. 120, 150 people in the yard and on the porch.
Just family.
All making music.
And you just kind of learned from them to play the guitar? Because I know you have a real unusual style of playing. I don't know if you all could see it or not, but at the orientation with the staff standing over there and sitting over there, and here are all these people who have done, you know, many musicians and guitar players there who have, you know, multiple recordings out. When he stood up and did, what was the song you did down there? Will the Circle Be Unbroken? They started singing, and then pretty soon, one after the other is going. I could see people from Swing Week and everything. Guitar playing. What's he doing? Where did you learn that kind of that style of guitar playing? It's real unusual. All that open, you're doing open tunings. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's an open E tuning.
He's playing the guitar with one hand. His left hand's.
My Uncle Will, I took a guitar to him one time that had bowed and had too high action on it, and it just hurts your fingers to try to chord it.
Oh.
And so.
That's where you learned how to do that. It hurts your fingers to do this.
Yeah, it hurts your fingers to get a G chord. Oh, Lord, it hurt because it was too high off the neck. So he said, here, Carl. And he stuttered like the Dickens. He said, here, Carl, here, let me show you. And he took and tuned it up, knee tuning, got a case knife handle, an old broke-off case knife handle, and used it like a slide on it. And it worked pretty good. I thought, hey, that sounds good. I was hearing that guitar clear for the first time. You know, it was always plunk, plunk, because you couldn't hold a string down tight enough.
guitar had music in it somewhere, didn't it?
Yeah, he found it in it.
Didn't know how to tune it.
I took it home, used it that way for a while, and then got a hold of a good guitar.
I know that you write a lot of songs, particularly, you know, maybe even writing different words to a tune you already know or something like that. And a lot of those, since the church that you go to now is a big, important part of your life. Some of those are religious songs. Do some for us so we can see your guitar playing and we can hear. Maybe if there's a chorus, if we pick it up, we'll sing along. Otherwise, you just go right ahead.
This first one, you probably won't be able to pick up on it, but we'll do one in a minute, you can, okay? This first one, I got to thinking about... You've seen people show up with a letter of introduction. Like, they're a good thing to have, you know, to a bank or from a bank. Great to have from a bank. I got to thinking, wonder what it would contain if God had sent a letter of introduction with Jesus. And I wrote one called To Whom It May Concern. Like I told my picker on her over there, she said, you know, you're not going to go over and warm up, Carl? And I said, I hadn't thought of that. That would be nice. She said, what do you mean? I said, well, I just go and open my mouth, and I don't know what's going to come out. It'll be the first time, you know, I've sung today. I should have been here to warm up with you. Couldn't make it. Bear with me over there, Dave. You might blow something. Well, to whom it may concern, here's my one son.
He grew up and today became a man. And now he's starting to roam so far away from home to make himself a mark in this great land. He's kind, he's wonderful and thoughtful, and he'll walk amongst you for a short time. He'll just ask that you have faith and believe him. Oh, I think he's perfect because he's mine. Yes, to whom it may concern, here's my firstborn, and I offer him to you with all my love.
Oh, I forgot it.
Skip that line and say... Oh, I know it now. Yes, to whom it may concern, here's my firstborn, and I offer him to you with all my love. You'll remember him forever as Jesus signed his Father, God in heaven above.
That's nice.
I like that.
Good thought, huh?
I like that. To whom it may concern. Isn't that nice? Yeah. You know what? Do one more where we can maybe sing the chorus on with you.
Okay.
Do one like, I don't know, even your fast one that you do.
Nah, that's too rough on everybody. I got one. I see.
I beg your pardon.
It is too rough on everybody. It's too rough on me.
Well. This is a tough crowd. We can take it.
I'll tell you a problem I got. I'm getting older, okay?
You're getting older.
Yeah. It takes me a lot longer to get pretty than it used to.
We've noticed.
I'm fine.
I'm sorry. I couldn't resist that.
You got help.
Yes, she's got help.
You got a confederate.
And so what you want to do?
What I started to say was, I used to sing in G and A and D, you know. Then I got to where I was singing in E, G, and A. Now it should be D and E and G. But G and D, G and E is all I got because I can't go down there unless I go up here.
What was it? Somebody made the prize comment yesterday talking about that. I guess everything's fallen. Everybody's been thinking about that. That's sort of been the comment of the week. Guess everything's fallen.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've got one called Don't Have to Be Judged by You, but I also got one called Streets of Gold.
You think we might be able to pick up the chorus?
Yeah, you'll be able to pick up the chorus on Streets of Gold.
Let's do it.
You're just going to have to ride back and get with it, though, when it comes time for it, okay?
All right, we'll get with it.
The chorus is, I'm going to walk them streets of glory.
Of glory.
Uh-huh. I'm going to walk them streets of gold. Got an invitation. here in my heart that I hold.
Got that? Got an invitation here in my heart that I hold.
Oh, got an invitation straight from Jesus here in my heart that I hold. I'm sorry.
We'll throw that in there.
Yeah, well, you can squeeze it. Compacts.
We'll go. Now, don't have any mercy. You just do it like you
okay.
do. We'll jump right in.
They tell me them streets are edged in silver. They tell me them streets are paved in gold. Well, I'm gonna walk 'em with my Jesus. Anyway, that's what I've been told. Well, I'm gonna walk them streets of gold. I'm gonna walk them streets of gold. Got an invitation straight from Jesus. Anyway, that's what I've been told. In my Father's house are many mansions, Jesus said in days of old. He's gone there now to prepare a place for me. Then I'll get to walk in the streets of gold. Yes, I'm gonna walk in the streets of glory. I'm gonna walk in the streets of gold. Got an invitation straight from Jesus here in my heart that I hold. Remembering, so we'll forget it. Yes, I'm gonna walk in the streets of gold. I'm gonna walk in the streets of gold. Got an invitation straight from Jesus here in my heart that I hold. Yes, in my heart that I hold.
Carl's going to be here all weekend too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So come up and meet him. Talk to him. He's got stories and songs just all over the place. You know, find him. Believe me. I saw him the other day. He had one little Japanese student. He's playing and playing. So, you know.
Oh, before I go.
Just doesn't take much
encouragement.
I don't
want to impose on the other guests but I got to, as they say, share this with you.
What?
But that's a sales pitch and I don't like to use it. Anyway, I got to tell you about this.
What?
This little Japanese you're talking about?
Little girl.
Yeah. They said, get together with these little Japs and, you know, let them practice their English on you. So I got me two or three. Okay. One of them kind of attached to me. We ended up over here to dance the other night, heading back out. Got out here and she said, I have never heard you play your guitar, and I had it with me. I said, okay. Come on over here. And we got over here and got on one of these benches. And she's sitting down on the pavement there. And I'm sitting here playing the guitar. And I'm playing things, and I don't seem like they're getting through. So I thought, play something other real, real old that maybe that she'll pick up on, as she's heard. And I played the Wednesday Night Waltz.
Mm-hmm.
And I never felt so sorry for anybody in my life. I looked down there, and that little old gal was just shaking all over.
Yeah.
And I got done playing. I checked her out, and she was bawling. She was bawling just wide open. And I rested down and got her and just hugged her up and held her for a while.
Yeah.
And it had reminded her of, I guess, her boyfriend at home.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just hurting like the dickens.
Yeah.
They're a long way away from home. They're nice people. Mm-hmm. And so if you get a chance, talk with one of them. They're real nice people.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Well, I think most of you met this man last night. If you didn't meet him yesterday, you heard him last night. Yes, indeed. This is Clyde Case. And see, tell me, I don't know a lot about where you were born. Where were you born?
I was born down in Braxton County.
That's about two counties from here, two or three counties.
That's 100 miles, exactly 100 miles from home to here.
He's made the trip many times. And were you? Was it a very remote place where you were born? Was it very far away? Or
it
were
was.
You
it was in the middle of nowhere when I was born there. Well, I mean, there wasn't anything, wasn't any roads, and there wasn't anything.
Yeah. How many children in your family?
12.
Well, your mama was busy.
My mama was a little woman, never weighed over 99 pounds in her life, and she could do more work than any man you ever saw.
I bet she could. She probably had to, too, didn't she? 12 children.
When I was the last one, and when all of them left, my father was kind of crippled, and she would help me shuck corn. She could shuck more corn than any man I ever seen.
Mm. Goodness. And tiny little woman.
Yeah, she weighed about, never did weigh over 100 pounds in her life, and usually about 98.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
There's 10 boys and 2 girls in the family.
How's that? How'd you like to raise 10 boys? And the youngest one be a rascal like this? Did they sing when you all were growing up? Did your mom have time to sing?
You know, my father and mother, they were old-timers. They come up in Webster County, really in the backwoods at that time. And they went to church, and back then, nobody had a songbook but the preacher.
Uh-huh.
See? And the songbook didn't open like our songbook. It opened like a tablet, lengthways like that.
Yeah, like me. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And the preacher would get up and line out a song, line out the verse, and then the congregation then would sing that line, and they'd line out another, and they'd sing that.
Uh-huh.
That's the way they sung.
I think some of you, I was doing that with some of you last night, and in other classes I've done some lining out. Yeah.
My father and mother was both good singers. What I mean, they didn't know anything about music, but they could sing. And most of my brothers and sisters, when we were little, we'd gather up. There wasn't no radios or nothing like that, and we'd sit out on the porch at night and sing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you singing just with a French harp or just...
Usually just sing,
just
you know, without anything.
Mm-hmm. Crickets. That was it. Sing with
my
crickets.
Mother was about the only person I ever seen. Did you ever see a Jew's harp?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My mother could make one of them talk, and she's about the only person I ever seen could really play one.
Yeah.
I don't know where she learned. I never could do it.
Uh-huh. It takes a talent, or you tie your mouth up with those
mm-hmm.
things.
Yeah.
If you don't get your tongue just right there, you know, to hurt yourself.
She could play it. She could really play one.
Well, maybe she heard somebody coming through, you know, it was sometime that was playing one.
I know.
How old were your mother when she died?
She was about 73 or 4.
Uh-huh.
On there
You had a birthday not long ago.
Yeah, had a birthday just a few days ago.
All right, well, so did you all, were you connected with a particular church when you were growing up?
There wasn't no church in the vicinity for a long time. When I was about 12 years old, there was an evangelist come in there and held a meeting and established the Villanova Baptist Church. I belong to the Villanova Baptist Church. Now, Villanova, where the Villanova come from, I don't know. The station and the railroad, we was 2 miles from the railroad, and the station was Villanova. The post office is Duck.
Duck. Mm-hmm. Duck, West Virginia.
Duck, West Virginia.
Yeah. Isn't that a neat name? How'd you like to say, I'm from Duck, West Virginia? I think that's neat. I always like that.
You know, I was working down in Charleston one time and had to get some insurance. And I went in and sat down on the table. There's a table there, and there's a woman sitting on this side taking this thing down. She said, what's your post office? I said, Duck. And she spit all over me laughing.
I don't know what it is, that you always tickle him, so. So, but I think the reason why I ask everybody about what church they went to, because the churches were many times the community center, you know. But in some of these very remote areas, it was so remote that it had church even was sort of the thing, like Carl was talking about. Church was, you know, your relatives gathering up under, you know, a certain tree or on a certain porch. It's just that it took, you know, you worked all week. And then, you know, to think about walking 5 miles to church somewhere, you know,
yeah,
it was just...
Nothing uncommon to walk 5 miles to church.
Yeah. How long did you go to school?
I made an eighth grade diploma. Mm-hmm. And back at that time, there was high schools, but you had to ride a train somewhere and board to go to high school. There wasn't any high school available. So by that time, all my brothers and sisters had left, and like I say, my father was kind of crippled, and so I was the only one left, and I took over the farm. We had a farm, a good-sized farm.
How many acres farm did you have?
About 220.
And so you were a teenager?
Yeah, as I was 12 years old, be exact.
12 years old. And you were sort of the man of the place.
I was the man of the house.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so you went, you finished eighth grade, and they gave diplomas for finishing eighth
mm-hmm.
grade then.
Yeah, they give you a test. They had 10 questions for whatever you studied.
Yeah, whatever category.
Uh-huh. And they give you 10 questions in each one of them, and then they grade you on that.
Uh-huh.
And if you made it, they give you the eighth grade diploma.
Uh-huh. So, but do you read much now? I mean, do you like to read?
You know, I don't imagine that this place down here would hold all the stuff that I've read. I read. I always said about 5 or 6 hours sleep will do me, and I read. You never see me sitting still 10 minutes no time unless I'm reading something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
My wife says I have wonderful eyes. I read for 6 or 7 hours on the straight sometimes. She reads for an hour, and her eyes will give out on her.
Yeah.
I read a lot.
You know, part of the reason why I asked that, because, you know, the news hits the front of the newspaper that West Virginia has the lowest paid teachers. West Virginia has everybody has the impression that West Virginia has pretty bad education and all that. Mm-hmm. And I know so many people your age who would, you know, went through, I don't know, you know, a lot of hardships to learn to read. And to this day, when I drive through Glenville, people who are retired, people who are 70 and over, are just going through paperbacks, just reading and reading and reading. They read a lot. And I know there's an old auctioneer that's there in my neighborhood who grew up in a very remote area. And his father, when he would come down to breakfast in the morning, this is a butcher fellow, Robert Butcher, and his father would recite one verse of Alfred Lord Tennyson, some poem, and as each child would come down, he would point to them, they'd recite another verse. Mm-hmm. So you had to know all the verses, you see, because you didn't know which one was going to be your verse for the day. and he would do all, you know, he can still recite Longfellow and all these, you know, long poems and everything, because, and his father I don't know that his father probably could read, but hadn't gone much schooling. But all of his children, you know, read very well and probably know more about American poetry than than most school children might today. It was just amazing. And I hear those stories repeated over and over again.
You know, I have a pretty good memory, and I could read when I was 5 years old.
Mm. I don't doubt
that. Now, that's the truth. I could read when I was 5 years old. And when talking about the schools, now, it ain't a bit of use in the world to try to teach anybody anything unless they want to learn it.
Well, there you go. Took my college professors 4 years to get that into my head just a little while ago.
I'll tell you.
That sums it all up. That's what the theory of education is.
I'll tell you why I know that. My first daughter, we taught her to read. When she was 4 and 5 years old, we taught her to read. She could read just about anything she wanted to. And the teacher, back at that time, there was just little community schools, you know. Mm-hmm. And the teacher, he just read. Oh, we don't want you to learn to read. We want to teach her to read how we want to teach her to read. And now half of them can't even read, can't even fill out a form to get a job or something.
Yeah.
Now, that's the way they taught them to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they had a formula. And everybody had to learn the same
way. Everybody had to learn the same way. Yeah. They call it phonetic or something like that.
Oh. Pray to teachers, beware.
Yeah. That's right.
But I'll tell you, when I learned to read, I learned to spell before I learned to read.
I bet you're still a good speller.
I can spell pretty good. I never had no trouble spelling in life and in going to school. But I learned to spell the word before I learned to pronounce it.
Hmm. Isn't that something? You know, at the folk festival there in Glenville, our little festival in June that we have, one of the big events is that spelling bee. And they have spelling.
Yeah.
They have that, and boy, that's the ribbon you want to get. You want to get the ribbon for winning a spelling bee.
You people are probably not old enough. Did you ever hear spelling where you had to spell and pronounce the word at the same time?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Tell them how you do that.
Well, like I say, the teacher would say, incompatibility. INCOMPATIBILITY, incompatibility.
Okay, do another one. I love this.
That's all I can remember. But I learned to spell volcano, POPOCHEPETL, POPOCATAPETL.
Do another one. I've heard you do some of these before. You got to do a little slower, though. We're not catching this.
My mind don't work fast enough. I can't think of it. You know, I can never think anything when I want to.
Yeah. Well, if they come up while I'm in the middle of a sentence, you just go right ahead and spell one.
Join the club.
You know, now listen, I'm not comparing myself in no way. I'm not in the same category as he is. Mm-hmm. But I was just absolutely amazed a while ago when he was talking about the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I worked in the mine. I've laid in the mine. I knew what he was talking about, a brass auger used.
Mm-hmm.
I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays a guitar, and he got a thumb pick and a pick, and I play a guitar, and in 40 years, I never seen, he's the second man I ever seen that wore picks on his finger like that.
Yeah.
And I do, too.
You do too.
Mm-hmm.
Tell him about that banjo you made, what it was made of.
Well, anything that had strings on it always fascinated me, the sound of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there wasn't none of my people ever played any kind of musical instrument. They could sing, but nobody ever played any musical instrument. When I was a kid, like I say, all of them left, and I was there by myself, and I had a room to myself. And there's back in 1917 or 18, there's a boy was drafted in the Army in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And he was down in Georgia someplace, and he went in a pawn shop and bought an old banjo. And he had two brothers at home. Well, he came home, he brought the banjo with him, and he traded to the brothers. And as time went on, I traded something, I don't remember now what it was, for the banjo. And when I got it, it had a flower poke head in it.
A flower sack head. Yeah, flower sack. A
now,
poke here is a bag.
I don't know whether you've ever seen one or not, but there's 25-pound bags of flour, and they had real heavy bags, paper bags,
yeah,
but
there's
real heavy.
People made clothes out of them.
And the inside of them was purple.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that's what the head was in the banjo. Well, it was all tore up different ways, and I had no, there was a bunch of the frets going off of it. And I had no flashlight there. Now, back at that time, if you wanted something, you made it or got it yourself. You didn't take it someplace and somebody fixed it, you fixed it yourself. Well, I cut up this old flashlight, and it's made out of brass, and put some frets in it. Well, the net, the thing that goes to the string, goes across up there, it was missing, and I was looking around for something to make it, my father kept cattle, you know, and we had a three-year-old cow, and she'd been dehorned. We kept the horn, a great big long horn, and I cut the end off one of them and made that,
that thing
up there. It goes on the, on the banjo. And I killed a groundhog and tanned the hide and put a groundhog hide in it.
Yeah. That was the head on the
banjo. That was the head on the banjo. It made it dandy, too. A groundhog hide.
Well, you had some metal parts back there in the back.
Well, this year is hard to believe. But
well, it hasn't been so far. We're
But back before I was born, the CNC, Coal and Coke Railroad, was built in Charleston up the Gasway about 1909. And there was a train coming from Charleston, and the engine blew up down Clay County. Mm-hmm. Blew up, killed all the front people, the engineer mm-hmm. and everything, just blew that engine all over the country. Well, my dad, of course, everybody gathered up parts of that engine. Everybody, people had parts of it all over the country. Well, my dad bought a blacksmith shop off a man down in Clay County, and he had the whistle off of that engine.
The whistle off the engine?
That engine, a big brass whistle that come off of that engine. And he had I grew up in a blacksmith shop. I'd go out and fiddle around and make things. And so when I was fooling this banjo, I had to have some piece of metal parts. I had to have one brace down there and a tail piece where you hook the strings to. So I cut up that old brass whistle and made them pieces of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you had a part of an automobile in there, too.
Yeah, right? I had there's an old star car. I don't know whether you ever heard of a star or ever seen one or not, but on the speedometer cable, there's a certain kind of a nut, and where the thing goes, the wooden thing goes back through, and there's a big nut, screw goes in it, not afraid to split that. So I took that thing off of that speedometer cable and put on the end of that wooden thing and put the screw in so it couldn't split.
I tell you, was the pot okay? You know, the rim of the head, was that all right?
Yeah.
And the banjo, it was intact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I know some people around here make the round part out of parts of a transmission.
Yeah.
Of a car.
There's a man down in Clay County that made banjos out of part of a automatic transmission of a 38 Buick. That's all it would make. It was just exactly the right size.
For a banjo. Yeah, that's Janice Cottrell.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you get a Janice Cottrell banjo, and isn't Phoebe his sister?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Phoebe Parsons, his sister, will be in here playing her banjo Friday.
Well, you'll probably see it. He made it from the transmission of the Buick automobile.
Yeah, it's something. Well, before we go, will you sing us one song? Will you sing us a song?
What would you like to hear?
Would you like to hear up close the one that he did last night? that real funny song, because sometimes we miss words when they're on stage.
Him and Davy Crockett.
About Davy Crockett. You want to hear that? Do that for him, Tom, if you're not tired of doing it.
I met a man caught up. I was walking down the sidewalk, and this young man caught. And he was telling me about how he enjoyed that song. Said I couldn't get all the words.
Well, we'll get them now. You just say it right out here, and we'll watch your lips.
Well, when I was a small boy, my grandfather, he was 89 years old. Mm-hmm. And he come down, and he stayed a while with us, two or three weeks, you know. And he didn't intend probably to teach me this song, but he'd sit around and sing songs. He composed much of songs himself. But this particular song, we'd sit around and sing, you know, and he sung it. And now that's been a long time ago, well over 70 years ago. Yeah. But I remember the words, strangely, I remember the words of that song.
Strangely.
Now,
we're not surprised.
The actual language might sound kind of funny to you, but I'm singing it the same words he used. And if they don't make sense to you, I can't help it because they words to you. But this is what it says. It says, come all you good people while we are journeying, and I'll tell you where I come from and where I got my learning. I'm just from old Virginia where you see all the great men. My name's Pompous Smash with the princes and the statesmen. I'll tell you of a little hunt I had of Davy Crockett. He was half coon, half horse, and half skyrocket. One day as he went out a-coonin', says, I'll go along and ask him for his gun, but he said he hadn't none. Says I, Uncle Davy, how'd you hunt without one? Says he, Pompous Smash, just follow behind Davy, and he'll soon show you how to grin a coon crazy. I followed close behind him till they come to a squirrel sitting on the pine knot eating sheep sorrel. Now stop, stop still, and I begin to feel. Says he, Pompous Smash, just brace again my heel. I poked out my foot and the brace like a sinner, and old Davy grinned very hard for his dinner. He grinned away a while, but it didn't appear to mind it. Went on eating sheep sorrel and never looked behind it. Well, now, said they, it must be dead, cause I saw the bark flying all around the thing's head. I come up a tree, this thing to discover, and all for to mash old Pompous Smash liver. But when he got up in the place of a squirrel, he's grinning at a pine knot as big as any barrel. Says he, you black calf, you'd better not laugh, or I'll bite off both your ears and I'll break you in half. I set down my gun, laid off my ammunition. Says I, Uncle Davy, I'll cool your ambition. Well, then we locked horns, and I thought my breath was gone, for I never was squeezed so since I was born. We fought away half a day, and then agreed to stop it, for I was badly hurt, and so was Davy Crockett. When we come to look, both our heads were missing. He'd bit off my head, and I just followed his'n.
All right. That's great. That's terrific. Well, I thank you so much for doing this today. I really do. And how long are you going to be here now?
I'm leaving. We're going home.
In a little while?
Yeah, maybe afternoon.
Maybe early afternoon? Will you be here for lunch?
Yeah, I probably will.
Okay, guys, now you know where to eat lunch. Find him, find his table. That'll be a great lunch for you. Get to know this man before he leaves. And you take a real, real piece of West Virginia back with you. All right?
Thank you all very much.
All right. Yes, indeed. And we'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow is...